Following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you could tune in once again. And before I forget to mention it, we've got a change in the schedule on our show, which normally comes on Sunday. This week, it will be tomorrow, Saturday at 7 a.m. And KSEV is changing up. They're expanding, I guess, for the better. They'll be adding on an FM signal so they can simulcast, broadcast, different part of town, apparently, different coverage. So in any event, in order to avoid the possibility of being, or their conversions in progress at 7 a.m. Sunday morning, they're moving us to tomorrow morning. So anyway. Before we get started, I wanted to just mention, as we normally do, the idea that just because you hear something on this station, on this time slot, or any other time slot that I'm on, or in fact, that anybody else is on, if they're espousing tax advice or investment advice, I say check with your current advisors. They, better than anyone, typically, I shouldn't say always, but typically, are going to be more familiar with your facts and circumstances and will know whether or not what you thought you heard is actually something you might consider. And if you don't already have real estate taxation advisors or retirement plan planning and taxation, investing your retirement funds in real estate, what your options are for that, etc. And perhaps you also are not structured to enjoy the zero tax rate as you get in to retirement. And I know I talk about that often as if it's just no big deal, it's easily accomplished, etc. Depends on how far ahead you start. And, you know, the idea is it's not really magical. It's simply understanding the rules. It's like many games, I guess you might call it. If you understand the rules, you can adapt to excel, to win. And in the case of the zero tax rate, you know, there is a level of income, earned income, not self-employment income, but income that you have receive from your investments primarily, including real estate private partnership syndications. I'm going to come back to that point. I had a call yesterday with a young investor, and we got to talking about self-employment tax, and I suspect some of you will be as surprised as he was at what that, you know, his self-employment role was going to do to him tax-wise. But anyway, bottom line, back to what I was talking about, there is a way typically that we can get you in to either the zero bracket or certainly in the case of a real estate investor where you're in partnerships and you don't necessarily control when those partnerships or those assets of those partnerships are disposed of, you hope to pay a little bit of tax, you know, some capital gains tax, perhaps, maybe a little bit of ordinary, with the recapture rules, the way those work. But bottom line is it should be no more than every other year, maybe every third year, you might have to pay some capital gains tax. But even that you may avoid if you're down below a certain level. You know, we've got a zero tax rate on the first amount of capital gain, depending on whether you're single or married, filing joint. And I don't have those numbers in my head, but it's a bigger number than you would imagine. And so, you know, it is often the case that you can enjoy the cash flow. You notice I didn't say taxable income. You can enjoy the cash flow in a given year without incurring tax. You know, income is taxable. Cash flow is not in most cases, unless the cash flow is from taxable income, if I might further confuse you. But in any event, we'll talk a little bit about that later in the show. But for those of you that don't have advisors, again, that understand those, that confluence, that five-way stop, if you will, feel free to go to our website at beaplanner.com and complete the, if you go to the forms link up at the top right or next to the rightmost link, and complete at least that first step, first form, the client profile, and then go to the rightmost link at the top, and you can schedule a call. And I'll be happy to work you in once I can get your forms, if you submit the forms, for a 30-minute call or so, where I can tell you what I see in terms of how you might meet your goals and objectives as you move to retirement. And for those of you that are still unaware of the train wreck that we have barreling down the tracks right now with regard to the future, you know, we've got a significant deficit issue at the federal level, and most states do as well. There's very few states that have positive budgets at this juncture, but in the case of the federal deficit, it's right at $37 trillion. It'll be significantly higher over the next 10 years, be about $20 trillion higher on top of the 37. And we don't know when, but we do know we cannot continuously spend $2 trillion more than we're bringing in and still be in a position where we're the beacon, if you will, of the currency markets around the world. You know, most markets delineate in U.S. dollars, and you know, effectively, and I know this may not be exactly what's happening, but we literally can and do print money, and that should not be thought of as an unlimited ticket that we have. There will come a day when it's going to hurt, and we won't be able to sell the treasury bonds, treasury bills, T-bills, at the same price point and interest rate, because people won't trust our currency or our ability to pay, I guess is more appropriate. And so, you know, something has to give. Either we got to spend $2 trillion less, or we can find a way to generate $2 trillion more in tax receipts or other receipts, tariffs, taxes. We can monetize some of our grossly underutilized assets, oil and gas reserves that we have, not yet tapped, like Anwar, and, you know, the 14,000 office buildings that we could sell all or part to generate some gains, some cash. And the big boogie bear in the room is the tax rates. And I know, you know, that Mr. Trump is seeking to reduce taxes. You know, we're talking about exempting Social Security from taxation. I guess, I don't know if it would be for all people. I haven't seen the language. I really haven't focused too much on the House version of the big, beautiful bill until the Senate starts to act like they're actually going to try to fashion something that would be passable. You know, they're going to have to sync up the Senate version with the House version, and the senators aren't quite as willing to roll over on all their, I guess, special interest spending that they have. Of course, they don't call it that, you understand. It's all in the context of what's best for the country. It's not necessarily what's best for their constituencies. But in any event, it won't matter. At some point, approximately 2029, maybe late 28 or 29 or 30, the balance that remains of our discretionary budget will have been exhausted. We will no longer have a choice without raising collections, without increasing collections, be that higher tariffs, be that sales of assets, or more likely be that a raise in the interest rates, in the tax rates. We won't have the luxury of spending like there's no tomorrow. It won't be possible, won't be feasible, because without the ability to sell bonds, we don't have the collections to fund the spending. And for those of you that think that we can just simply go print the money, like the modern monetary policy folks, that's never worked without causing significant inflation. And so I think the strong likelihood is that we're going to see a lot more taxes at some point. And I'm suspicious of how, and again, Mr. Trump is all too often right or correct in his thinking. So I'm rooting for him. I'm hoping that he can increase the inflow of taxable or tax receipts or collections, if you will, to a point where we won't need to raise the tax rates, where we can eliminate tax on tips, tax on Social Security, and all the other goodies that right now, depending on who scores the GOP, the House version of the big, beautiful bill, it's anywhere between a $5 to $7 trillion increase in the deficit. I believe it's over a 10-year period. It's not each year, I don't think. I sure hope not. But you know, the likelihood that it blows through the current cumulative debt is 100%. I mean, you can't take away the tax on the assorted goodies that have been promised. And it's not just that. Those are the two that most of you will have heard about. There's other programs that effectively, one way or the other, reduce our gross receipts. And that's problematic. And so, in any event, for those of you that are still thinking of possibly investing in real estate, certainly buying a single family home or four would be better than doing nothing. But I think if you understand how the money is made in multifamily investing versus single family, you may realize that single family offers typically a greater return with more stability in the cash flow, and less hands-on. And I know a lot of people will always complain that, you know, if I'd known I was going to have to take phone calls about, you know, plumbing being stopped up or, I don't know, a limb fell on the home. We had a storm. A limb fell on the roof, did damage, you know, just a number of things that, you know, been there, done that. And I'm sure anybody else that's been in the single family real estate business, you know that there's nothing that beats a multifamily project when you're not the one running the show. You're a passive investor. And yes, there are challenges in the multifamily market. We've been through a lot in the last 2 years. There are ups and downs, and there are losses as well as gains. And I would tell you that if you've been in that niche for a while, you're probably ahead of where you would be if you simply had done single family, and now you're riding out that single family portfolio long enough to allow inflation to do its thing and have the home value go way up. Hopefully you're on a fixed mortgage, so you've got you know, inflated dollars paying an old loan, old debt, and you can enjoy the appreciation, even though you may not really be ahead in terms of your actual spending capability. You know, if everything else goes up except your loan that you had to finance your properties, you'll have a gain, believe it or not, even though most of that gain is attributable to inflation. And it's just how things work. And to the extent you've got your money in hard assets, like a piece of real estate with a fixed rate, you will benefit from inflation. You know, the multifamily market is a great place to have invested when inflation kicks in, as long as you've got a fixed rate agency type loan and you're not getting hit with rate increases, you know, every 2 or 3 months when the Fed meets, which is what we've had happen over the last 2 years. 11 rate increases by the Fed Reserve, and that pretty much wipes out, certainly wipes out any cash flow that would have gone to the partners, and it may well wipe out your ownership in the property. And I've seen that happen, experienced it myself. And at the same time, I've got properties that I acquired back in 2005, 6, et cetera, and they are significantly higher in large measure due to inflation. I mean, it's due to some other things. The locations I'm in San Antonio are privileged. And there's some incredible activity going on right now that could double the value of these properties once again. You know, for those of you that might know San Antonio and be a Spurs fan, you're probably aware that we've got a new arena proposal that looks likely to have the support of the people. And everything that I own is within five blocks, of that new sports and entertainment district that'll be downtown. So, you know, you've got to find a way to get into the game. And I've seen it many times with clients. I've seen it in my own situation. I've got a client that bought a home, I don't know, back in the late 60s, early 70s, and a neighborhood that's just off 610 north. And, you know, I think their $40,000 home, they just sold it for over $500,000. In fact, I believe it was closer to 600. And it's not because the materials that crafted that home got to be more valuable. Yeah, those materials got more expensive, but that's not nearly the full story. I mean, the location was part of it. And again, a fixed rate loan, inflation. And, you know, it's amazing how just your principal residence, you turn around and what's really a few years. I mean, I know it's probably 30 years in many cases, but it's like I used to say about people going back to college. I used to really, and still do, encourage older people to do it, because I always say, well, you're going to be 35 or you're going to be 65 anyway at some point. Why not have that degree? You know, and I'll say the same thing about real estate. You know, you're going to be older anyway. Why not have an asset for something that, you know, you get utility from? Now, all that said, I'm also going to bark about the fact that buying is not the smarter choice right now in most major markets. And I guess if you look at it as a forced savings account, you might justify it. But if you were really disciplined and instead decided to rent a residence, and you were really disciplined, you invested the difference between what you would pay to rent versus what you would pay to buy in some highly appreciating assets, like a multifamily private partnership syndication, you will come out ahead in the market like Houston or Dallas or San Antonio, typically with the ratio of rent to buy. If you take that extra money and invest it, renting has and will continue to be the better outcome here for quite some time. Let's go ahead and take a break. We're about halfway through the show, and I will circle back here momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control. take it like a man.
Nathan Ross, CPA, and, you know, I mentioned earlier that, you know, in terms of the zero tax math, I was going to circle back and talk briefly about that. And, you know, when you think about paying zero in tax, you know, we're not saying you're going to make zero taxable income, but we're going to say you're going to have some zero taxed income streams. Like, for instance, for those of you that have listened and maybe gotten tired of hearing me talk about Roth conversions, you're taking money out of your Roth, either IRA or 401. You know, the 401 has a lot of advantages that are not taxable, but in any event, you know, we're also talking about perhaps you having some cash value life insurance, like an index universal life policy, where you can have a cash value that you can take money out on loans that, if they're structured properly, will not have to be repaid. You may also have some municipal bond interest. You could have tax-exempt withdrawal from your HSA. You know, there's a number of income items that are de facto on their face not taxable. And then you've got the ability to take income that would otherwise be taxable, but it's below the standard deduction for the amount of money that you can take without incurring income on your taxable income. In other words, your taxable income would be zero. Let me look at going to get the amounts for you for 2025. It's more than you would think. For a single person or married filing separately, it's now, this for 2025, it's $15,000. Married filing joint is now $30,000. Head of household, $22,500. And that's assuming you're not over the, let me look at what the age for... if you're old people, like yours truly, you'll get even more. I believe it's 30,000. I'm pretty sure it's in the $30,000 range this year. I'll try to track that down if we take another break. But bottom line is, and then I mentioned the capital gain tax rates. Let me see. I talked about this last week, but I don't have them on the tip of my brain. Let's see here. We've got three brackets. We've got a tax bracket of 0%, 15%, and 20%. And so to the extent you have $47,000 or less as a single filer, or let's see, what's the 15% bracket? Well, the 15% bracket is if your gain goes over the $47,000, but not over $518,000. And then the 20% applies to taxable income exceeding the 15% threshold, and it's over, which means it would be over the $518,000. So, you know, you've got the ability to be either in a very low rate or zero and still have generated almost $50,000 in capital gains, plus the 15 if you're single, the standard deduction, plus a lot of distribution from your Roth IRA. It depends on what you have, Roth IRA or Roth 401. And by the way, there's no RMDs on Roth accounts. So that gives you some control over what's going into that taxable income calculation. By the way, the Roths also do not go into the indexing for Medicare. The IRMA premium is the acronym. And so that doesn't go into IRMA, and it doesn't, we don't care about exempting Social Security because it doesn't affect the taxation of your Social Security. So you think about it, getting to zero has a pretty powerful incentive for people that have their income structured appropriately to avoid running without a net, so to speak. I mean, if you're able to get your income from these assorted streams that I mentioned, and then when you think about pairing this up with real estate, especially multifamily real estate, typically the distributions you get out of those partnerships are not taxable in terms of calculating your taxable income and therefore your tax in a given year. The tax that's paid typically in real estate multifamily projects come when you exit the property, because the interim years, the cash flow is the difference between the amount of money that you're bringing in and the amount of money that you pay out as a cash item, meaning you pay your light bill, you pay your water bill, etc. And to the extent you've got a positive bottom line, normally the depreciation will take care of that positive number and drive it negative so that there's no taxable income. And again, it's one of the unique things about the business of real estate. I mean, I'd be hard pressed to name you another business where you're getting a deduction for assets as they appreciate in value. I guess some folks in the oil and gas sector may say, well, that's, you know, we get depletion on the oil and gas reserves. Well, you're getting depletion because it's gone. In other words, you're not, you can deplete that asset to a certain extent. We can depreciate our real estate even as it continues to escalate in value, and it doesn't drop because it's used up, unlike the oil and gas reserves. So again, it's a rare part of the tax code. It's the best type of business to be in if you can get started. And the fact that you can do it from a passive standpoint, where you don't have to get out of bed in the morning to go run that Class C rehabbed or renovated apartment complex that you've been able to be part of a larger partnership group that is elected a lead partner, and the lead partner is the one that's run the project, and the lead partner is the one that found the loan to buy the property, where you're not having to find the loan, you're not even having to sign on the loan. You're passive. And again, it means that you put your money in and the lead partner is the one that takes care of finding the capital, be it a loan from a lender, be it raising money from folks like yourself for the total necessary to undertake the project. And the lead partner is responsible for hiring, you know, the contractors to renovate the property, for the leasing staff to get new tenants in at higher rates, because, you know, once you renovate a property, you're generally, in most markets, able to raise the raise the rents on the newly renovated units. and that creates a higher net operating income, which in turn leads to the opportunity to refinance the property, you know, 2 to 3 years into that project and get 60 to 80% of your capital back for the partners. And then you still own it for another 4 or 5 years, and then sell it. And that's the point that you would typically be expecting and praying that you're going to owe some tax. So, you know, to the extent you can do several partnership investments, then you've got more moving parts that can generate, you know, disproportionate years of taxable income. And, you know, it gives you the ability to better manage your tax load. Your tax load typically will be one of the highest expenses that you face in retirement. Let's go ahead and take our last break, and we'll come back momentarily, and we'll continue this discussion on investing in real estate and taxes, etc. We'll be right back with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Like the song, Bobby McGee, I'm just longing to be free. Take me where I want to be. Big dreams and big cheese. And there are many just like with big dreams and faded cheeks. Big dreams and faded cheeks.
Last segment of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I have been talking about a couple things, trying to help you understand how to get to the zero tax rate in retirement with multifamily real estate. It's not as hard as it would be if you were having to deal with required minimum distributions out of your retirement funds as opposed to doing Roth distributions. I'm going to continue to encourage each of you that have pre-tax retirement money to think about converting all or a portion of those funds over to the Roth type of account where you won't have to pay tax on it the rest of your life. You'll pay tax in the year you convert, and of course we can even manage that to do a partial conversion every year or every other year. I figure we've got, depends on what happens here in these midterm elections that'll be coming up before we know it. I know it seems like just yesterday, but that's probably, seems like just yesterday that Mr. Trump was voted back into office. But, you know, the midterms, I guess, take place a year from this coming November. That sounds like a world away. Well, it's not really. And, of course, the other side of the aisle, in the meantime, will be doing everything possible to frustrate the Republican side. It's just the other side is experiencing some, I think, some brain disorders, maybe some Trump derangement syndrome, because they can't seem to learn from prior mistakes. And as I'm watching the goings on right now in LA, and it's like you just scratch your head wondering, when would these people learn that when they did this the last time? And I don't mean the protesters. I mean the true insurrectionists that are funding the protesters and the Democrats that are partaking or participating in those riots. Do they not understand that they're on the wrong side again? And, you know, I'd hate to see the Democratic Party reduced to nothing, you know, moving forward. I mean, I would have thought the Republicans would have done that before the Democrats, but, you know, hey, I think it'd be nice to see them go before, show us how it's done, right? So, in any event, the bigger issue that should concern us with regard to the politicians, which, regardless of which side it is something we should be able to agree upon, is, I mean, it should be bipartisan, is how do we deal with the debt that we've both parties have contributed to. It's not Democrat, it's not Republican, but boy, is it some horrible math that's barreling down the tracks. And I suggest that it won't matter as to your political views in the near term, because we're going to get wiped out by the debt that nobody wants to stand up for and turn back the spending that's really destroying our country. So anyway, so in terms of the Roth options, I wanted to mention, you know, there's several things about real estate and multifamily partnerships that make the Roth conversion really much easier to facilitate than doing it with other types of investments. And, you know, with the multifamily real estate, when you invest in one of those projects, you're going to have the partnership as a whole will have an operating agreement that describes, you know, the rules for running that partnership. So there will be different rules in place for, you know, that will prevent you from selling your interest, that need not prevent you from converting to Roth, because you're not selling. But you don't have to dispose of the interest in the partnership or otherwise sell or convey it to do the Roth conversion. It happens with the ownership in place, and it simply moves from your right hand to your left hand, if you want to think of it that way, your right pocket to your left pocket. And it, in the case of an IRA, it can move from a traditional IRA over to a Roth IRA, or in the case of the self-directed 401 trust, otherwise known as a solo K, it can move from the pre-tax side of that plan. Think of it as a duplex, or actually a triplex. We've got a pre-tax side of the plan. We've got a non-deductible contribution section of the plan, like a non-deductible IRA. And then we've got a Roth component of the 401 trust. And so we can move money in plan or in service and in plan from one section to the other. And that becomes very easy to accommodate. The difficulty with doing Roth conversions is understanding how to value the amount of the interest that's being converted. And if you're invested in these real estate private partnership syndications, you're going to have a third party, someone like a CPA or a lawyer, that understands how to value these investments. And that's something we've done routinely, and understand, for instance, the discount levels that are available for private company investments, so that, you know, when you convert, let's assume you put $100,000 into a real estate private partnership. Well, if you'll take a look at the private placement memorandum you were provided before you invested, you'll see there's a section towards the beginning of that document referred to as the risk factors of investing in this transaction. The lead partner is obligated under the SEC crowdfunding statute, Rule 5, to provide certain disclosures. One of them involves identifying the risk factors that you need to be aware of before you invest. And some of you may be saying, well, wait a minute, nobody said anything about that in a deal I'm in. Well, you may be investing vis-a-vis a 506C type offering, which is for accredited investors. And if you're accredited, which means you have $1 million net worth, or you earn between $200,000 and $300,000 a year, depending on whether you're qualifying on a single basis or a joint married basis, you know, it may not, you may be accredited, and perhaps the disclosures would not apply to you. In most cases, they're not required, although I see most syndicators that are continuing to provide those disclosures, just because oftentimes it makes more sense. It gives them some protection that somebody won't be able to say later, well, gee, I didn't understand this was a real estate investment and subject to all the things that can be a problem with real estate. Like, you may not be able to refinance when you thought you could. You may not be able to sell when you thought you could. You may not be able to find tenants for your property when you thought you would. I mean, there's all kinds of things, and most of it, or a lot of it's common sense. I don't know that I would say most of it is, but bottom line is, you know, all of life has risk, including real estate, including the home that you purchased or the one you rented. You've got all kinds of things that can go wrong, even on a rental property. And so, you know, the fact that the SEC mandates disclosures shouldn't cause you to clench up and not take action. Keep your eye on the goal. The goal is to get to your refocused years. I'm going to use refocus instead of retired. We refocus as we get older. The goal is to get there and know that you've got enough money to take care of you for the rest of your life, which is typically, at least according to the IRS life expectancy tables, would be about another 20 years. So you want to know that you've got, you want to be able to outlive, or you want your money to outlive you, not the reverse. And again, with the medical technology we have, 65 is not old. Speaking as a 65-year-old, I can tell you I feel older, yes, but it's not old compared to what, again, even the IRS life expectancy tables have us 65-year-old males living to 85 to 86, females are 87 to 88. So you're going to have to do better than 3 or 4% a year with stock exchange type assets in most cases. And don't forget, if your money is not in a Roth type plan, and you tell me, well, gee, I've got $1 million in my 401 plan, I'll be okay. No, you don't, because you're forgetting who has a claim on what will probably be about half of that money, and that's the IRS. That's your silent partner. And as you start taking money out, you're going to be paying likely close to half of it to the IRS at some point. Not right now. You're going to pay enough right now. It won't be a half, but depending on your other income. And so, you know, if you've got pre-tax IRAs or pre-tax solo Ks, it's harder for us to get you down to the zero tax rate, but we can certainly get you closer to zero, maybe keep you in the 18 to 22% range. But again, it depends on a myriad of other income streams, and you need to at least understand which ones are preferred, and we start working towards getting you set up for that. Well, I believe we're close to the end of the show here. We may have about a minute remaining. I want to just mention again, we'll be back on the air tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. That's Saturday this week. And then after this weekend, presumably we'll go back to the Sunday slot, and KSEV will be up with their FM station at that point as well. But in any event, thank you for joining us, and we hope you can join us tomorrow again right here on 700 AM, KSEV, the voice of Texas. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.